Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Go 95.7, the game. It's time.
Let's just put the rat on the table, Goop.
Stiny.
The thought, I die alone, I laugh the loudest today.
Yeah!
And Guru.
Hell yeah! So I go, who paid for me? She goes, sir, it's free when you're over 44.
On 95.7, The Game.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Friday to everybody out there in the Bay Area. Hopefully everybody is safe. They're quarantining as we continue to get through this coronavirus. Matt Stibitz out today, having a nice little personal day. I'm Bonte Hill. Daryl the Guru Johnson's in the building, and we got the one and only Butcher Boy, Joe Shasky. Boys, what is up? Goo and Shasky, what's happening?
We're going back to the playoffs!
Guru, I'm pretty
what's
fired
up, Shasky?
Man. I miss you guys.
Hey,
I'm not going to lie,
I'm super
guys.
Fired up.
You know, have you guys been getting into any new activities during this quarantine?
Have you been getting any?
Well, you know what, Guru? Butcher? I've been walking.
Walking? What, did you go
I've
on another
walking.
Walk yesterday,
Go ahead, Bonte.
Did you go on another walk yesterday, Guru?
Yes, but what happened? Yes, I did. I went for a 2-mile walk. That's not that far. Shasky, I've been going on 7-mile walks. But my problem, fellas, is it's what happens after the walk. I ordered round table after the walk. Shasky, Bonte, that's not a good look. And I know pizza's not a burger, but it ain't a salad, bro. So I need some help. I need some, you know, some willpower.
Guru, when I talked to you yesterday after the show, you were at Subway. So you with the Subway and round table?
You know what? I spoiled my kids. I went for Subway for Lil Daryl. Lil Daryl wanted Subway, so I got him Subway, and that was for lunch. So I didn't partake in lunch, but I got the round table for dinner. Got the 12 wings, family of four. You do the math. I think I might have stole one from one of the kids. So I had four wings.
You know, all right, guys.
Shasky, what's up, baby?
First off, I miss you guys. I'm going crazy during this quarantine, and I figured that I need to reinvent myself, all right? And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm crazy, and you two can talk me off the ledge. I'm not into the walking like you. I'm not into 8 Mile, Eminem, Guru, whatever you want to call yourself these days.
I am into
cycling, all right? I am now 24 hours in. I'm a cyclist. Call me Butch Lamont. I am back in the game. I got a helmet. I got the gloves. I went over to Haight Street, saw American Cyclery. I am now riding my bike every single day around the city, trying to enjoy this solidarity. I got my new iPod, headphone thingies that I'm going to use where you can sweat in them. I am a cyclist, boys. Me and Barry Lamar Bonds and LeBron James, we're just going to cycle through the city.
Wow, I'm going to start calling you.
What are you cycling on? What do you got? What type of bike do you have?
Well, I got myself a little, it's kind of like a cruiser, right, if you will, but it's also got the different gear shifts, so I can go up and down hills. Look, I'm telling you right now, I am going to buy a bike, I'm going to build the frame out. I'm going to build the whole thing out. I'm going from the scratch all the way to the finished product, and I'm going to have the flyest Wolverine bike out there. I'm telling you right now. Right now, I'm using an old Duster, but I will get upgraded. I'm going to have the Porsche of bicycles at some point. You're going to catch me on the streets, people.
Love it.
You hear this guy, Guru? I mean, this guy is unbelievable.
I love it.
I'm going to start calling him Joe Armstrong because it's a matter of time before you start seeing him yoked up, looking like Barry Bonds on a bike. I mean, this guy is unbelievable, biking around the city because he's lazy. We'll get to that later. Guru, I know you love uniforms, Goo, so we're going to get into some uniform conversation because Shasky thinks that every 49er uniform is all beautiful and great, so we'll get into that a little bit later. We'll get into some NFL draft. But, fellas, I was watching last night the 2006 Rose Bowl, which many consider the greatest college football game ever. And I remember watching that game to this day. Went to Sizzler before the game. It was hyped up. Keith Jackson on the call with Dan Fouts, Reggie Bush, Vince Young. You had all the stars out there. And I lost a lot of chicken on that game. So I don't like really replaying that game, even though it was a phenomenal football game. But it got me thinking to what is the greatest game of all time that we've watched? And we could throw this out to the listeners, 888-957-9570. What is the greatest game you've ever watched? I mean, is there one game in particular? Are there three? Is it a three-way tie? Is it football, basketball, baseball? What is the greatest game you guys have ever watched, fellas?
Wow, I'm going... And I'm not being a homer, fellas. It involves your team. I'm going to 1992 NFC Championship game at Candlestick Park. I was there. Everything was on the line. It was Allie Frazier. It was Lakers Celtics of the NFL. You knew you were watching the two best teams, and whoever advanced, Shasky, was pretty much going to win the Super Bowl. And I had the privilege of not being in the lab, but being there. And that game came down to the end. Troy Aikman, Steve Young, Jerry Rice, Alvin Harper, Michael Irvin, two great coaches. So to me, fellas, and I would give it up if it were two different teams, that was the best sporting event your boys ever been to, and it didn't disappoint. And that by far, in a landslide, is the best sporting event not only did I watch, was able to be a part of.
That's not bad. That's not bad, Guru. I got to say, I think in more recent memory, I go to game sevens, right? Because game sevens, to me, that's where everything is all on the line for the entirety of the game, and you're just on edge. First one, San Francisco Giants. That double play by Panic and Crawford is one of the all-time great moments in World Series history. And then just Madison Bumgarner coming out like Paul Bunyan after the Giants starters in game six and game seven only record a combined six outs, for crying out loud. You knew once he came in that the door was shut, but in that ninth inning, people forget Alex Gordon hits a double and he could have scored on a play earlier. Juan Perez was bobbling the ball, and I would have sent him. I would have sent the runner coming around third. But that game seven, I was literally standing up the entire time. The other game seven that I think goes into the same category, and it sucks that we lost, but it is one of the greatest games ever. The first half by Draymond Green was outstanding. The second half by LeBron James, after Festus Ezeli fouls him, from then on, he just went on a tear. And then obviously kind of the stalemate, if you will, in the final 2 minutes where both teams just couldn't score. LeBron with the
final 4 minutes, Butch.
It was
the final 4 minutes.
Yeah. But the block LeBron had on Iggy and then the Kyrie jumper, like, hey, look, it breaks my heart. It's one of the losses I'll never get over, but it's one of the greatest games I've ever seen. So I think both of those, kind of the agony of defeat and then the victory of joys after you win a game seven, those are the two that I put at the highest.
No, those games are great. I mean, Madison Bumgarner coming in, excuse me, fellas, Madison Bumgarner coming in the bullpen and just shutting down the Kansas City Royals. Giants win that one 3-2. That is up there. For me, there's a few games, and I can't decide which one, so I'm going to take the easy way out. One is the Diamondbacks-Yankees Game 7 in Arizona, 2001, with Curt Schilling and Randy Johnson. I know Curt Schilling is a bad word around these parts, but, man, what a riveting game. Mariano Rivera blows the save. Luis Gonzalez hits the game-winning, has a game-winning hit. Diamondbacks win their one and only World Series championship. That Game 7 was one for the ages, no doubt about it. I also think the Broncos-Packers Super Bowl with John Elway winning his first championship. I mean, wow. back and forth. Nobody expected the Denver Broncos to win that Super Bowl. Kyle Shanahan holding the cords for his dad, Mike Shanahan. They win that Super Bowl. Terrell Davis, of course, with the migraines, put the braces on. He runs wild over the Green Bay Packers. We all hate the Packers around here, so it was fun to see them lose. I thought that game was great. And you know what? On the text line, they're calling me out, and I cannot deny this. Game 7, a couple seasons ago, Sharks in Las Vegas Knights. Sharks down 3-0 with about 10 minutes left in the third period. And what happened after that was bananas. I've never been in an arena, fellas, where the crowd – I couldn't hear myself. I couldn't hear the crowd. It was deafening. The Sharks win that one in overtime. That game 7 was absolutely phenomenal. So those three right there come to the top of my mind. Also, City College of San Francisco, when they won their first state championship under Justin LaBall, when they beat Citrus 83-81. I'm telling you guys, that's one of the most well-played basketball games I've ever seen in my life. So those four games right there. And we've seen a lot of games, fellas, and it's hard to really pick one game. Those four games come to my mind.
Let me ask you, too, this one. Where do we rank the Super Bowls in general? Because I know everyone wants to go straight to 28-3. I think the greatest Super Bowl of all time is the Seahawks-Patriots one, where Tom Brady eclipses Joe Montana and has maybe the greatest fourth quarter at any point in the history of the NFL we've ever seen, against the Legion of Boom, 13-14, 200 yards, 2 touchdowns. And just the drama, the way it ended, you assume that Marshawn Lynch is going to get the ball on the 1 yard line after a Jermaine Kearse unbelievable acrobatic catch, and then Russell Wilson drops back and throws it and Malcolm Butler picks it off. I mean, Guru, how are we not talking about that as one of the great games of all time?
It was, and it's up there. But on any level, Pop Warner, Bonte and Shasky, what Seattle did was not supposed to happen. Malcolm Butler was not supposed to get an interception. You know why? Because the play should have been, let's run the ball to beast mode. So you're right. It had the drama. But to me, I'll never forget this. It's Joe Montana's drive, the touchdown pass to John Taylor, your team, ooh, fellas, against the Cincinnati Bengals. And you know what? The Bengals played a good game. They played a good game. You could say they were deserving to win, and to watch Montana and company go down on that drive, and Montana just basically remind everybody why they call him Joe Cool. To me, it broke my heart. I was rooting for the Bengals, but it was a confirmation that Joe Montana was here to stay. And to me, it's the reason I say he's one of the best quarterbacks ever. Bonte, let me just say something to you real quick. You guys know I didn't have a dog in the race that World Series against the Yankees and Diamondbacks, but the Diamondbacks uniforms were so god-awful in the guru's world. I went third person in the guru's world. When you wear uniforms like that, you can't win the World Series. And I was rooting for the Yankees. And when Gonzalez got the hit, I believe he got the hit, I was just like, I can't believe they're going to beat the storied New York Yankees in those road gray uniforms, fellas. It bothered me, Shasky.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And you know what? We're not Diamondback fans around here. I mean, to see them win that World Series, I'm not going to lie. I was rooting for the Yankees, too. I was rooting for Jeter because I was a big-time Jeter fan, and I like greatness. So, Guru, you are right. The uniforms were god-awful. Another Super Bowl. I'm glad you brought up Super Bowl 23, the last game for Bill Walsh as a 49ers head coach. I know he ended up going back to Stanford, but it was emotional for him. John Taylor with his one and only catch to win the game, to have that game-winning touchdown, to hold off Steve Weish and Boomer Esiason and Icky Woods and all those guys. The Super Bowl a couple years later was also great, with Whitney Houston singing one of the best national anthems, man, of all time, Super Bowl number 25,
Giants,
between
Bills,
the New York Giants and Bills. That game right there, nobody thought the Giants had a chance with Jeff Hostetler, the K-Gun Buffalo Bills, no huddle, run and shoot, Thurman Thomas. The way the Giants and Bill Belichick figured out a way, and Bill Parcells figured out a way to slow down the K-Gun and keep them off the football field, I think is one of the more underrated Super Bowls of all time as well, and one of the better games we've ever seen in Super Bowl history.
you guys with the uniform slander. I mean, the Arizona Diamondbacks are a brand new organization. They're going up against 150 years of legacy with the New York Yankees. What was wrong with the purple pinstripes with the cut sleeves and the little turquoise?
You're not the Yankees. You don't deserve pinstripes. You don't deserve pinstripes. And then they're purple, Shasky. You got to come up with something else. You're the Diamondbacks. You're new kids on the block, and you got the audacity to go pinstripes. And then the poetic thing about it, they end up beating the team that is known for the pinstripes, the Yankees. It just bothered me, Butch. It bothered me. Still does.
Let me tell you, that was probably the lowest moment in Mariano Rivera's entire career.
No doubt.
I mean, it's pretty unbelievable. And you know what? He jammed Luis Gonzalez on that play. Like, he had no business getting a base hit on that. He got nubbed, as we like to say in the baseball world, where literally he probably had stung hands as he was jogging down the first baseline. What's crazy to me is that Craig Counsell was a huge part of that World Series, and he did the same thing to the Giants in 1997 when he won the World Series, and he rolled through the Giants in 97 with Renneria in them and the Florida Marlins. It's funny to me that both the Diamondbacks and the Marlins were such brand new organizations just in the scope of Major League Baseball. We talk about the history of the game going back to 1850. And for both of those teams to have such immediate success, it's pretty remarkable. Like, I know we look back on it, it feels like forever ago, but both those teams have won, I guess, a combined 3 championships within the first 15 years of their existence. That's pretty remarkable thinking about it now.
No, it is. And it drove me crazy when the Marlins swept the Giants in 97 and ended up beating Cleveland in an epic Game 7.
That was when JT Snow got threw out at home.
No, that was 2003. That was 2003.
Why did you send them?
Man, I know. Richard Reyes coming up, he was red hot. Trust me. JT Snow rounded third base, I've never seen a wider turn around third base in my life. I swear, I was done with baseball for – I may have been done with baseball for a year after that game. I'll get into a story about that later. I left, fellas. It was 5-0 in that game, the JT Snow game in 2003. I left to go buy myself a cell phone at Metro PCS. I was done with the Giants. I come back home. My little cousin's at the door. He goes, Bonte, the Giants rallied. They rallied. It's 5-5. I said, open the damn door then. And Felix Rodriguez came in, just like he did in the World Series a year before in game number 6. Blows it. Marlins goes up 7-5. We know what happened in the ninth inning. Bad memories here. Real quick, fellas, on the text line, 957-95 on the Chilton Auto Body text line. From the 510, they said the Bills-Oilers wildcard game back in the 90s, one of the greatest games ever. And then from the 925, Boise State and Oklahoma Fiesta Bowl was one of the best games ever played.
Statue of Liberty playing that one. Going back to the 2003 divisional round game against the Florida Marlins, you got to remember they're coming off the World Series, the Giants are. They get rid of Dusty Baker. They bring in Captain Hook, Felipe Alou, and they go wire to wire. They win the NL West wire to wire. It never been done by the Giants at any point to win wire to wire a division. They had never done that. And Jose Cruz Jr. drops that ball after getting a gold glove in right field. He was unreal that entire year. And Jason Schmidt didn't have the gut to go out there and pitch a second time in that series. I'm still mad at the Penguin Jason Schmidt for that. I cannot believe he didn't pitch again in that one. And let me tell you this, guys.
Juan
Pierre destroyed the Giants in that series.
He was the roadrunner.
Him and Brad Penny and Dontrell Willis and Josh Beckett, that team was loaded. And like a 19-year-old Miguel Cabrera, do we look back at that Florida Marlins team in 2003? They were one of the all-time young, up-and-coming teams. And what's crazy is outside of Miguel Cabrera, all the rest never really had success. I know Beckett had some success with the Red Sox later, but very few and far between.
Do not slander Juan Pierre like that.
Oh, wow.
Producer Mikhail coming in here trying to slander him. 888-957-9570. Let us know what's your greatest game that you've ever watched or been to. Let us know here on BSNG. Joe Shasky in for Matt Steinmetz, Derek Guru Johnson, Bonte Hill. Look, Shasky brought up 2016 Game 7, Goo, and we were talking about Steph Curry with the shot last year. But we went back to Game 7.
I got something for you. Go ahead.
Yeah, yep. Game 7 to 20. I swear, you know what? And I'm kind of with Shasky here, to be in that building My hands were sweating from the opening tip, not only because I was a Warrior fan, because it's Game 7 of the NBA Finals. It's LeBron James. It's Steph. It's Draymond. It's Clay. What is Harrison Barnes going to do, and what was his last game as a Golden State Warrior? You got Kyrie basically playing horse out there. The atmosphere, the intensity, I mean, the tension was so thick you could cut it with a butter knife. I mean, it was insane, that scene in Game 7. And to watch those last 4 minutes where both teams struggled to score, and then Kyrie hits the three. There's the, I mean, I, you know, it's, as far as atmospheres, you guys know I always talk about the Fiesta Bowl this past December with Ohio State and Clemson. Game 7 right. of 2016 is one for
you
the
You
don't
game. Let us forget.
It was a low-scoring game. But the atmosphere, I've never even experienced anything like that.
And since we've been on lockdown, fellas, I've watched that 2007-2016 game a million times. And you guys tell me if I'm being a snob a bit, because it was Game 7, and I wasn't in the building. I was in Texas. Me and my pops watched the game in its entirety. So am I being a snob when I say no matter what sport, it's Game 7, you're already, I expect that intensity, that electricity in the building. But the snob part comes in, fellas. The last 5 minutes, there was one bucket scored. Yeah. It was Kyrie's three. There were two coaches that were negligent, and I love Kerr, by not calling timeout. And the one that called the timeout, Lou, that's when Kyrie hit the three. So I bring up snob because if LeBron missed, like, and he was phenomenal, like, four shots in that five-minute stretch. Yeah. Clay hit a shot of air ball where he was open. Steph missed. Dre missed. Iggy missed. And I guess what I'm saying, fellas, can I take points away from the execution? Even though when I watch on my Samsung LED 61-inch, the atmosphere and Bream and the rest of the gang, Van Gundy, it's amazing. But I'm like, damn, where the buckets at? You know, because it's Game 7.
But, Guru, these two teams had already played each other back-to-back years. Like, they understand every set that the other team wants to do. And when you get into a Game 7, everyone's exhausted. Let's remember the context. Iggy was hurt. He hurt his back. Draymond was coming off the suspension of the two games. Outplayed LeBron in the first half. And then Steph Curry injured.
He did. Straight up.
He's on the perimeter trying to shake and bake Kevin Love, and he can't even get around him. The play of the game that to me, again, Father's Day, I'll never forget it. The play of the game for me that I wanted to break my television was when Steph came down and went behind the back out of bounds pass to Klay Thompson. I remember dad and me, I'm screaming, what are you doing? How could you get cute with it right then and there? The season is on the line. And Iguodala pulled a Richard Jefferson, if you remember back to that Spurs series where Richard Jefferson tried to lay one up like Tayshaun Prince and got batted. It was unbelievable. Yep. Dunk that ball, Iggy. Come on, man.
You know what? J.R. Smith made a hell of a play to alter Andre Iguodala from shooting that layup. J.R. Smith
got
back on defense.
You're right. You know what?
From my vantage point, I was standing right by Tim Roy calling the game. And I looked back to see where LeBron was. I said, there's no way LeBron James is going to get to the shot. And in my peripherals, I just see this guy in a black uniform flash so quickly. And I'm like, oh, my Lord, LeBron James is going to get to this ball. That play alone may be the greatest play in one of the greatest Game 7s of all time. One of the greatest games I've been to. That may have been one of the biggest plays, greatest plays, in one of the biggest games I've ever seen in my life.
It is. And I'm going to say this, and I'm going back to Steve Kerr, and I love him to death. Him putting Fetus Azili in the fourth quarter where LeBron got the three. I don't think we've ever seen all three and then got another and one down there or foul to where it was like if it was a chess game, putting Fetus in that situation helped Cleveland get that trophy. And there's no way, Shasky, you could tell me any different, man.
No, you're 100% right. I've said it forever. The Varejão minutes in the second quarter were absolutely atrocious. They were unbelievable. He was flopping around, fouling people. I was like, get him the hell out of here. Where's the hook? I needed Felipe Alou to come yank him off the court, to be totally honest with you. And then Festus Ezeli. Remember the context. Festus barely played that entire year.
Wow.
Festus had no rhythm. He had no confidence
whatsoever. You put him on LeBron.
It was terrible. And then LeBron pump faked. He had no business. He was not going to shoot that three. He was ice cold. And Festus, like a bull in a china shop, just flies into him and gives LeBron a bunch of momentum. Dude, as iconic as the block was, and it is one of the most iconic plays in LeBron's storied career. Like, it'll be at the front of his highlight package. That Kyrie jumper, that three-pointer. I mean, look, I can't stand Kyrie, but the way he boom, 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 and then just rose up and hit it.
No doubt.
It's one of the great moments. And I love Steve Kerr off the court, but his allocation of minutes, this is where my biggest issue with him.
Go ahead.
Offensive
Butch.
Creativity, the allocation of minutes when it comes to lineups, he waited till the 6.5 minute mark to get Steph Curry in a loser goes home game seven for the lifetime. He left him on the bench. I don't care if he's hurt or he's got one leg. Get Willis Reed up. I need him in this game. Even if he's walking the ball up the court, stop it with trying to insert someone other than Steph Curry, the best player in franchise history since Wilt Chamberlain. Why is he not in the... Yeah. LeBron sat for 10 seconds and it was between the end of the third quarter and the fourth quarter. And Tyronn Lue, to his credit, called the timeout late in the third quarter, knowing he would get that rest plus that TV timeout. Yep. Look, Tyronn Lue was a better tactician in the moment than Steve Kerr. You can't take that away from him, and it pains me to say it.
I'm going to throw this little nugget at you real quick, B. You know, when you play basketball and you go to the park, the ultimate thing you want to do is a game-winning shot, obviously in a game seven. But the Warriors, just real quick, there was 55 seconds after he hit that shot.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like it was 3-2-1, go home. Right. They had action, fellas, and that's what bothers me so. But we talked about it, Shasky and Bonte. But they had, and the Warriors that year and what they represented the prior years, I just expected more. And it was like they the whole Draymond thing, forget that. I won't. But the fact that you were even in that game, you lost before the ball was tipped because you had Cleveland down 3-1, arguing 3-1. In the locker room, and we know the rest is history.
When Cleveland won on that game in Game 5 on that Monday night, and Kyrie and LeBron start cooking, and they found their rhythm in that series, I said, we will be back for a Game 7 on Sunday. There was no doubt in my mind that the Warriors were going to win Game 6 in Cleveland, and they didn't. They got wiped out in that game. Draymond was MIA. Harrison Barnes didn't score a bucket in that game, and that's why Harrison Barnes, I don't want to rip on the guy, but 5-for-32 in the last game of that series. They needed somebody else to step up with Curry basically running on fumes. Livingston running on fumes. Klay running on fumes. They needed somebody else to step up, and they got nobody to step up here. We're going to take more of your phone calls. Brian and Palo Alto, hang on tight. A lot of guys on the text line, fellas. How about this game real quick from the 510? Texas A&M versus UCLA. UCLA trailing 44-10 in the third quarter. Came back and won 45-44, led by Josh Rosen. Remember that game, fellas, at the Rose Bowl a couple seasons ago?
Screw the Bruins. We're talking about a college football
game. A Saturday
game
afternoon game. That was a Labor Day, fellas. How you going to rip that at the great Rose Bowl, fellas? 44-10.
I was waiting on my drop.
You guys are killing me here. Don't forget.
In the history of – give me like – at least if you're going to drop a game, give me like – Niners Saints, you know what I mean? Divisional round where no one sat in Candlestick the entire time, and Alex Smith had the greatest 4 minutes of his entire life.
When we get back, fellas, I got another one for you.
Hey, Jim. We're going to continue this conversation. Download the radio.com app. Search 95.7 The Game. Add it to your favorites. And don't miss a second, whether you're at home, in your car, or at work. Use the rewind feature to catch any moments you missed in the last 24 hours. You can also tell your smart speaker, hey, Alexa, or hey, Google. Play the 95.7 The Game app right here. Here's what's coming up on 95.7 The Game, brought to you by Chilton Auto Body. We're going to continue to talk about the greatest games ever. What is your greatest game you've ever watched or been to? 888-957-9570. That's all sponsored by Chilton Auto Body. Our world has changed dramatically, and Chilton Auto Body is committed to helping maintain a sense of normalcy. All Bay Area Chilton Auto Body locations are open to support you. They'll even deliver your car to when it's ready to drive again. Schedule your appointment today at ChiltonAutoBody.com.
Now back to Bonte, Steiny, and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
Real quick, boys, before we continue this conversation on the greatest games and greatest moments you've ever witnessed, let's get to Brian and Palo Alto.
That's a bad man.
Brian and Palo Alto here on BSNG. What's happening, Brian?
guys. How you doing?
Good, good, good.
So I would say the 81 NFC title game would be my bet. Greatest game I've ever seen, most impactful on the Bay Area. Just because it was so improbable and the Niners have such a horrible history with the Cowboys. So I'd say that would be my number one of all time. I wasn't at the game, but I remember it distinctly. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Thank you. That's a great call there. Tom Landry, the Cowboys were never the same.
Can I
after
say,
that,
okay,
Guru.
Let me stop.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm excited to have
I wasn't
you.
Even thought of yet. I may have been like 2 months old in my mom's belly. Shasky wasn't born yet. But Guru, you were around
back to
as a little five-year-old.
Yeah, I was around. And my my beautiful mom, rest her soul, Daisy Mae Johnson, had lasagna, my favorite, in the oven because we thought it was a wrap. We just assumed we're going to the Super Bowl. And I want to say this to you. Like that Kyrie Irving shot, people don't understand with that play, the catch. Dallas had a possession, and Danny White hit Drew Pearson on a post route, and they tackled him by the shoelaces. And a lot of people don't know they were inches away from getting that go-ahead touchdown. So when I watched that game back, I'm just like, a lot of people think it was over, Butch, with the catch, but Dallas had action.
Guru, first off, it was Eric Wright from Missouri, number 21, who had horse collar, number 88, Drew Pearson, the original number 88 for the Dallas Cowboys. And Danny White fumbled on the very next play from the 50-yard line. There was time on the clock. I mean, they obviously had an opportunity to kick a field goal and win that game. Here's the funniest part about that game. Niners turned the ball over three times, and no one ever talks about that. And
Montana,
here's the
three
other
interceptions.
Element. Here's
Montana.
The other element. Tony Dorsett had his best season in 1981 for the Dallas Cowboys.
Yep.
Exits the game with a separated shoulder in the second quarter. No one ever talks about that. It's just like Steph and the injury. History forgets the nuances, and no one remembers that the MVP damn near of the league in his best season ever as a Dallas Cowboy, 1,700 yards that year, Tony Dorsett exits the game with a separated shoulder. You're telling me that didn't ruin the offense Danny White and the Dallas Cowboys? Get out of here.
Hey,
Danny White, Bonte, who
that.
Lost three straight NFC championships from 80 to 82. The Eagles and Redskins. And I'm going to say this real quick about Dorsett, my idol. He tapped out in a few of those NFC championship games.
Really?
To where I was like, damn. I just watched them last week. I was like, damn, Tony, when the going gets tough and Olivia Newton-John, they get physical, you kind of are easy to tackle, bud. I'm just, go ahead, Bonte.
You know what's funny about that NFC championship and watching that game over? Shasky's right, Montana threw three turnovers. The Niners were tight because they couldn't get over the Dallas Cowboys in the 70s. In that era where they lost three straight NFC championships. Earlier that season, the Niners thought they had gotten to the Cowboys' head by blowing them out at the stick. I think the Niners dropped like 45 on the Dallas Cowboys, and the Cowboys just thought, we'll see these chumps again. They're going to fade. But Chassie's right, the Eric Wright horse collar tackle there, right at midfield. Drew Pearson was going in for the score. Disappointment and heartbreak was about to happen at Candlestick Park. And Brian from Palo Alto, who just called us, is right. That altered the NFL. That started one of the most dynamic and dominating dynasties we've ever seen in an NFL outside of the New England Patriots. The Cowboys, of course, lost to the Washington Redskins a year later in an NFC championship, and they were never the same under Tom Landry. They were never the same up until Jerry Jones bought the team and brought in Jimmy Johnson and Coastal Cowboys.
You know, I'm glad that you brought all that up because Lambeau and my man, not Lambeau, what's his face? Who's the guy who's the Green Bay Packers head coach for so many years? His name's
Vince Lombardi.
Now.
Lombardi.
Vince Lombardi. So Lombardi and
Vince
Landry
Lombardi.
Were...
Come on, Chasky.
Mike McCarthy.
I'm sorry. Lombardi and Tom Landry were both coordinators for the New York Giants in the 50s, okay? And my man Y.A. Tittle was the quarterback back then. They had Frank Gifford in the backfield. Well, one of them was known for offense. The other one was known for defense. Tom Landry would change the game in the 70s with the 4-3 defense. Wow. And the one thing that my big takeaway, Randy White and Ed Too Tall Jones
54.
Were unstoppable. Unstoppable on that defensive
I'm about
line.
To tear
no
up
one
me,
talks
right?
about that. I mean, no, but it's unbelievable. And I didn't know that Ed Too Tall Jones wanted to become a boxer, okay?
Yeah. He got fighter. In the ring. He got in the ring. He had some
exactly.
bounce.
Guru, and, how about Hollywood Henderson? Hollywood Henderson, yes, talking smack to Montana. When Montana threw the touchdown pass to Dwight Clark, he basically started pointing at Hollywood, yep, Henderson, because apparently Hollywood Henderson was talking that smack and wanted that smoke from Joe Montana before that game.
Yeah, and the Cowboys had to be on whatever, Southwest, whatever plane they were on, thinking the Niners are not us. We're America's darlings. We're it. And that did change the landscape, man. And Bill Walsh became who he was. And I remember just real quick, vividly, about Tom Landry, 44-3 loss at home to the then 1986 Chicago Bears. And that's when Jerry Jones, it was down times for Dallas, and Jones came in years later and told him to hit the pipe. But, yeah, Landry was a real one, as they say in the streets, fellas.
Well, and I think that that's where, like, if you just look at the ebbs and flows of the NFL, it went from offense in the 60s, at least that's what they hung their hat on, Lombardi did, and then defense in the 70s with the Steel Curtain and the Dallas Cowboys, back to offense with the 49ers and Bill Walsh, and then it kind of went back to defense with the Dallas Cowboys and the New York Giants in the early 90s. So it's crazy how the league has kind of ebbed and flowed, and you guys are right. Oh. That is the moment when the 49ers obviously went to the forefront, the Cowboys started to fade. If you don't have that moment, I mean, maybe Tom Landry rolls a little, wow, longer and they don't go after, wow, Jimmy Johnson when they do, because no, they struck gold with Jimmy Johnson.
Oh, man. Jimmy Johnson now going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We know what he did with the Miami Hurricanes. To trade Herschel Walker. To trade Herschel Walker. For me in my lifetime, fellas, and Guru, I want to get your opinion on this because you're a resident Cowboy fan. When Herschel Walker was in his heyday, he was special. USFL with the New York Generals, of course, a Georgia Bulldog, one of the best college running backs of all time. And during that time, when the Cowboys traded Herschel Walker, what were Cowboy fans thinking? Were they in agreement with the move? Were they like all in on the move? Or were they saying, what the hell is Jimmy Johnson and Jerry Jones doing?
It was, what the hell is Jimmy Johnson and Jerry Jones doing? Because at the end of the day, it was so down that all you had, and you know, I love players or somebody to identify with. Number 34 was it. But we weren't winning with them. But still, you're telling me now I got to sit down and tune in to games without Herschel for all these draft picks that went over my head, and I didn't know they were trying to do construction to build damn near a dynasty, you know, getting three titles. So at that time, I was hurt, and the pain was just like, you know, I know who's not winning the Super Bowl, and to start a week one of a football season, and that's what you anticipate, like a Browns fan or things like that, Tampa Bay Bucks, that's the worst feeling in the world, fellas, knowing, you know, looking your face and looking yourself in the mirror that your team ain't got no shot. Oh, oh.
You know what's funny, Guru, is that when we talk about these great games, we always want to like cling on to the Niners winning in 1981. The weird part about it is the Niners have been attached to a lot of devastating losses where the other franchise can say this, man, is the high water mark. So, for example, wow, Seattle in 2013, that NFC Championship game up in Seattle, the Michael Crabtree, Richard Sherman.
One of the greatest games ever. Go ahead.
Yeah, of all time. One of the hardest team games ever. And then
it was
Kansas City in the Super Bowl. Kansas City in the Super Bowl this year. That seven-minute stretch is going to go down in Kansas City sports history, but in the opposite direction for San Francisco fans. I mean, Bonte, it's crazy how the 49ers ended their season three straight years against the New York Giants, obviously against the Ravens in the Super Bowl, and then Seattle on the last play of the year.
Oh, you know what's funny, fellas, is that, you know, we all do this. Shasky, Guru, Kyle Madsen, we all watch these games over. There's two games I will never, ever watch over. Well, let me not say never, but I haven't done it yet. It's
game
six of the 0-2 World Series against the Angels. When the Giants were up 5-0, I was watching that
Russ
back
Ortiz,
about 7 years ago.
Scott
Spezio. MLB Network. When they took out Russ Ortiz and I was watching the replay, I turned the TV off and said, I can't do it. I didn't have the stomach to do it. I can't do it. In the 2011 NFC Championship against the New York Giants, I have not watched that game over. That one is the most depressing loss of all time in my lifetime. When you think about Kyle Williams fumbling, the one for 13 on third downs, Crabtree having one catch for 3 yards, that defense was so devastating. They beat Eli Manning up in that game with Willis and Smith and Bowman. The Smith brothers. That game I will never, ever watch back because that was a team that was like, this is the one that's going to win it. Frank Gore, Alex Smith, they're going to do it. Vernon Davis, they're going to do it. I will never watch that game over. I haven't yet. I've watched the Giants lose or the Niners lose 15-13 to the New York Giants with Jeff Hostetler. I've watched that game back just being a kid, and I cried after that because it stopped the Niners from three-peating. But that Giants game, the NFC Championship in Harbaugh's first year, I've yet to watch that game back. I can't do it.
Yeah, but Bonte, I was sitting at the 45-yard line for that game, and it was starting to rain in the second half. Ahmed Bradshaw clearly fumbled. And they said his progress was stopped. It's one of the guitar string rip-outs that Navarro Bowman was so famous for. And I know you're talking about Eli Manning. Look, that is Eli Manning's greatest game. You could say whatever you want. He avoided sacks like I've never seen a quarterback do in my life.
I gotta fire it up again.
He was throwing the ball away. He did take punishment. And don't forget, Brett Swain was starting opposite Michael Crabtree because Ted Ginn Jr. didn't have the guts to sue it up. That guy drives me absolutely crazy. That defensive line for the New York Giants was really good. The 49er defense was better, but Eli Manning had the great, I'm telling you, the numbers may not show it. Contextually,
he's a Hall of Famer to me, man.
Hey, I'm telling you, watch that game. That is the greatest game I've ever seen under duress from a quarterback because he should have been sacked 67 times in that game.
And let me throw this in. I believe Alex Smith, and I know you go to Kyle Williams and your boy not suiting up, but when you have an NFC championship game at home, and we're talking about check down Alex, and you only complete one pass to a wide out, to me, I think that severed the relationship with Harbaugh. And when Cap came, that pain from that game that nobody thought Harbaugh still was holding on to is what went into him make it was bigger than just the next season.
I tell you the game.
How can you have that on your ledger?
I tell you the game. Alex Smith. Go ahead, Chasky. I tell you the game where Harbaugh lost
the
trust.
The following year, he threw three interceptions in the first half to the New York Giants, and everybody thought in 2012, you have to go through Antrell Roll in that defense and secondary, and they all said after the game, we sat down on every single route. Alex was never going to throw the ball deep, and that was the seminal moment that everybody points to. Oh, Alex was awesome in the Cardinal Monday Night Football game. It was the week before that against the New York Giants. When he looked pitiful, and we thought at that time you have to go through the Super Bowl champs. They are not dynamic enough offensively. Well, am I wrong, Bonte?
Antrell Roll said that comment. Kaepernick came to that game before the end, before halftime, and he completed a deep pass, which got the Niners a field goal right before halftime. But they ended up losing something like 27-3. And I remember Ahmed Bradshaw after the game, he goes, "To beat the champs, you got to beat the champs, and they ain't ready yet." And that was the game people said Alex can't do it because literally, if you were at that game, the Giants played 15 yards within the line of scrimmage and never felt that he was going to throw it deep at all. And there was another game, too. There was another game that season when the Niners traveled to New York City to play the Jets. They ended up shutting them out, but Alex Smith couldn't complete a deep pass to save his life. And I remember the sideline saying, "We need big plays. We're tired of going 15 plays, 80 yards, and kicking three. We need 6-play drives for 70 yards and get six." And that was the thing with Kaepernick. They came in, and they were so much more explosive with Colin Kaepernick at quarterback that season. And then that leads us to Super Bowl 47, which I'm going to ask you, fellas, since we're talking about devastating losses, what is the most devastating loss you've ever seen or witnessed as a fan of your team?
It was this Super Bowl. I mean, are you kidding me?
Wow.
You're up 10 in the fourth quarter, and the ball, even if, look, erase all the other stuff, okay? You have the ball at about the 50-yard line. Jimmy Garoppolo's got it. He has his opportunity to have the Super Bowl MVP served to him on a platter. Here is your seminal Joe Montana moment in the 49er red and gold. On the biggest stage, Tom Brady is like on the outskirts of the New England Patriots. Everything was sitting there for him to snag the MVP, snag the first Lombardi for this organization, and Kyle Shanahan, him and that defense. It was a team-wide meltdown. There is no doubt about it in my mind. That is the most devastating loss because you were up. You weren't just up three. You weren't up seven. You were up 10 with 7 minutes to go. It was 3rd and 16, 3rd and 18. Are you kidding me? You really blew that. And then you have a ball 1st and 10 from what is it, the 47, the 48, whatever.
49-yard line.
I mean, come on, guys. Are you kidding me? Up 10? And then you have an opportunity after all of the negativity to still just score right here, and all is forgotten. And they just crap their pants.
And you know what bothers me about that game, and I know, Bonte, I'm about to raise your blood pressure. I may not, is Mahomes, we know what he is and how great he is. What bothers me about that game from a Niner defense perspective, they passed that Mahomes test. He threw an interception in the fourth quarter, the one where they stopped him two times. He was flustered. Troy Aikman said he's not having his best day. And
Quan dropped another interception.
I'm not knocking Mahomes, but I watched that game like, damn it, the Niners defense passed that test, and this is the worst part of it. Richard Sherman passed the test too until the end because the offense couldn't do anything, and then on the most critical plays, it looked like what people thought was going to take place in the first quarter and didn't. When he got beat for a couple passes, oh, Richard's old. That bothers me about the Kansas City victory. Is like,
wow,
they did what they did in the fourth and the first, and they didn't, and the Niners had it won. And I'm not even a Niner guy. I just hate Kansas City's, you know, the ideology behind it is, oh, we dominated the Niner defense. Watch that game like I did 50,000 times. No, they didn't.
Hey, you know what? We're gonna get into what the Niners draft needs are, and I got a feeling that it's gonna come back around to Jimmy Garoppolo at some point in the conversation. But I want to just chime in on the most devastating loss as a fan I've ever suffered personally was 1993 when the Giants lost in the last game of the season against the L.A. Dodgers. They won 103 games that season. I'll never forget. They were up 10 games in the NL West, the old NL West, where there was only two divisions in each conference, and you went straight to the Championship League Series. I went to Camp Mendocino that year, that summer. Giants were up 10.5. I come back from Camp Mendocino, pink eye and all, and my grandma said, oh, did you have a good time? How was it? And I said, Grandma, I need a paper. What's going on with the Giants? Because back in those days, in the 90s, there was no cell phones. I wasn't calling. There was no ticker. There was no TVs like that at camp. She goes, I grab a newspaper, fellas, and the Giants were only up 3.5. And I said, what is going on? And the Braves, you traded for crime dog Fred McGriff, a.k.a. Giants killer, that left-hander who should be in the Hall of Fame, and the Giants on the last day of the season. Solomon Torres. The Giants were 17-2
down the Reggae stretch.
Oh, you should have. They were 17-2 down the stretch with the only two losses being suffered by Solomon Torres, who was a rookie. They got smoked. Mike Piazza hit two home runs that day. They got beat 12-1, and I cried like a baby because Matt Williams was on fire. Barry Bonds' first year as a Giant, he was on fire.
It
was
and it's 162 games that you've been rooting
162
for.
162 games. They won 103 games. Oh, and check this out. God. The Braves beat the expansion Colorado Rockies that year and didn't lose a single game to the Rockies that year. Wow. They won 104, and they end up losing to the Phillies. Joe Carter hits a home run. Blue Jays beat the Phillies, but that loss right there in 162, most devastating loss I've ever suffered as a fan.
There's no
and
doubt about it.
Losing, go ahead, B.
I was going to say losing to the Dodgers of all teams where they did the reverse Joe Morgan. I mean, everybody talks about the Joe Morgan home run that knocked the Dodgers out of the playoffs on game 162 in the early 80s. But this one was so bad. Here's another one. John Paterson hit a grand slam against the Braves in Atlanta in the fifth inning. I'll never forget it. Late August, early September. And they blew that game, Bonte. It was a team-wide meltdown. And you're right. The crime dog getting traded from San Diego, a team that just – he was an absolute Giant killer with that swing where the bat would go over the head after he'd let go with that one
absolutely
arm.
Absolutely.
Crime Dog was an unbelievable player, but that team with Ron Gant and Terry Pendleton and all those guys, that Braves team was unbelievable. And because the Giants only, you know, didn't make the playoffs with 103 wins, that created the wild card as we know it today.
Yeah, and here I go. Somehow, everyone I go to, you guys' team is involved. So I'm a nobody. I know that. But if I ever had a novel written, a chapter, Butcher and Bonte, would be how it is to be a Pirate fan, a team that notoriously loses 100 games in a season.
Sid Bream.
And in 2013, we beat the Reds in the wild card series. I felt like we were on our way. We arguably had one of the best, most talented teams in baseball, but we lost the next round to the Cardinals. And I didn't lower my head because I thought the Cardinals at that time were better. But the next year, we should have won the division. We didn't.
Lemon
we host
booty.
The San Francisco Frisco Giants in 2014, and this team was ready-made, the Pirates, and Crawford hits that grand slam, and that's
Garrett
when I
Cole.
Realized, damn,
why didn't they
it's
pitch
over.
Garrett Cole? They pitched
Bozquez. Oh, he pitched the last game of the season. Dude, just Tom
that
Seaver would have took the ball. You know what I mean? Those guys back then would have been like, I'm pitching, you know? Gibson,
Coop,
I'm pitching.
Coop, I'm surprised because watching growing up in baseball, I was – Chasky and I are youngsters watching the Pirates and Braves go at it in back-to-back years in the NLCS. Bobby Bonilla, Andy Van Slyke, Barry Bonds, Jay Bell.
Jose Lynn.
Doug Drabeck. You guys lost Game 7 in back-to-back seasons. I'm surprised you didn't point it out when Goo won at Atlanta County Fulton Stadium when Barry Bonds couldn't throw out Sid Bream, and the year before at Riverfront Stadium where you guys lost to the Braves and got shut out.
Doug Drabeck in that Game 7, the one Barry couldn't throw Bream out, Drabeck pitched his tail off, and there was an error, like I want to say the seventh inning by Jose Chico Lean. And it wasn't one of those back-breaking errors, but it gave up a run in a game like that. And you know how I think? I knew then, right then, the tomahawk chop, we were going to lose. And Barry's throw, oh, man. I know he's not a 5-tool player, but Sid Bream with the piano on his back, that will forever haunt me. But I'm going to just say this real quick.
Pirates.
Yeah, Barry in the playoffs, he wasn't a man. He wasn't Barry. So had tasted him not being Barry, and I never understood it. At home, at Three River Stadium, I don't know what it is. Did people forget Barry gets a pass? I dealt with Barry not being Barry in the playoffs, and that haunts me, man.
But, okay, first off, two things. Sid Bream, ex-Pirate, who went to the Braves, and so was Rafael Belliard, who crushed the Braves. Remember him, Rafael Belliard and Blauser? They were unbelievable up the middle. But regarding Barry Bonds, the 2002 playoff run where he had seven home runs throughout that stretch, getting walked
phenomenal.
A zillion times, that ball from K-Rod that he hit out.
It's still I told Bonte.
Troy Percival wanted no part of Barry Bonds throughout that entire series. I just don't get me started on Barry Bonds. John Lackey? Are you kidding me? I hate the rally monkey. I hate the Angels so much. I mean, what about Eckstein? Remember Eckstein with that little hat?
Stop, Shasky. Stop. You're making my blood boil. Guru already started it with the Super Bowl 54. And Troy Aikman said, boy, Joe, Patrick Mahomes is really flustered here. They need to make a big play, and boom, he hits Tyreek Hill on 3rd and 15. And then we know about Game 6 down at Atlanta. I swear, Game 6 of that series, the 0-2 series, and I know
why did
A's
he give him the ball?
Dude, if A's fans want to chime in on their worst losses they've ever suffered, I want to hear from A's fans too because they've suffered from some devastating losses.
How much time you got?
I looked at my grandma.
Kirk Gibson.
I looked at Grandma Essie, my play grandmother. I looked at her and said, the Giants are about to win. And I couldn't believe it. And I said, the champagne is all nice. And I'm sitting there by myself watching that game. And when they blew it, I worked the Niners game the next day at Candlestick Park. They played the Cardinals. And everybody's like, oh, game 7. And I said, fellas, this series is over. They are done. You don't recover from a devastating loss like that, fellas. You just don't. You're just like Bill Buckner and the Red Sox against the New York Mets. You don't recover from that.
And Bonte, they started LeVon Hernandez in that Game 7. LeVon was literally undefeated in the postseason, had a World Series championship on the mantle. He was the man in the playoffs. He was the dude. Like, the way we look at Andy Pettit and some of these playoff performers, that's what LeVon Hernandez was. And they didn't go to Kirk Reeder. And I've heard so many people over the years say they gave the ball to Kirk Reeder. And Kirk Reeder was awesome. LeVon was like 11-0 in the postseason up to that point. It was his only loss ever was that Game 7. It's just, they should have clinched it.
Guru.
Walking out of AT&T the way they did in Game 5, I thought it was a wrap. I really did. I thought it was over. And when Dusty flipped the ball to Russ Ortiz, are you kidding me? Scott Spezio with that little
don't even show up for Game 7. It was over. The fact you let that one get away, it was Saran. It was a wrap, fellas.
Hey, Tiyoshi Shinjo recorded last out of that World Series. I said, Shinjo is batting with the season on the line. Great. This one is over. I don't even know why I watched that damn game.
Bonte,
that ball Barry hit, that's amazing.
If it was, you're talking about Shinjo being the DH in that particular series. People forget Andres Galarraga had cancer, and he had treatment that entire year and sat the year out. He would have been the DH on that team. Yeah, he would have been the DH, and I'm telling you, would have made the difference to this day. Don't forget Scarface, Benito Santiago behind the dish. That team was loaded. I mean, that is Santiago, one of my all-time favorite Giants teams.
Santiago with a great home run in NLCS against the Cardinals, a three-run shot to get the Giants a 3-1 lead in that series, and then Kenny Lofton ended that series with the game-winning hit scoring David Bell. More of that stuff coming up. Antonio in Oakland, stay on hold. We're going to get you. He has his worst loss coming up right here on BSNG. It's Joe Shashky, the Butcher Boy, in for Matt Steinmetz, my guy Daryl the Guru Johnson, and Bonte Hill. We'll be right back, and it's all brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.